The Inside Ellen Road podcast is sponsored by PR Supplies at Unit 2 Wither Park Industrial Estate, Leeds, postcode LS53AP. Check out PR Supplies on Facebook for all your home retail needs. Hello and welcome to the Inside Ellen Road podcast, your home of Leeds United news, debate, analysis, and of course, a little bit of whimsy. I'm your host, Joe Donoghue, and I'm joined by the YEP's chief football writer, Graham Smith, as per usual. Before we begin, an Inside Ellen Road first, you can actually watch this podcast now on shotstv.com or Shots TV Freeview Channel 276, moving with the times. Graham, you're just back from Daniel Farke's pre-Norwich City press conference. I have to say, I'm feeling rather chipper, despite the change in weather this past week. The international break's done and dusted for another month. We're off to Norfolk this weekend to sample some of Delia's home cooking in the press lounge. Leeds are in relatively good form. And there seems to be, dare I say, a fresh, more positive vibe about the place.
Yeah, I'm in a good mood as well, actually. The football is back and it was a good news day at the press conference. Daniel Farke was in good form. I don't think he's a big fan of lots and lots of media duties. I suppose in the same way that Marcelo Bielsa was no real fan of lots and lots of media duties. But I do feel like Farke gives off the impression that he quite enjoys his press conferences. Or if he doesn't, he's a phenomenal method actor. He really is. Because I thought today, questions where he maybe could have just, you know, given a very, very short, glib response, he went into a lot of detail. And we must have been with him for half an hour, slightly over half an hour, and went through a range of topics. But I guess when you won the first two games before the international break and your international players have come back without injury, despite some of them playing quite a lot of football, and you're starting to get the injured players back and you're about to go back to Norwich, you know, a very, very fond reunion, then I guess you would also be in good form.
Yeah, completely agree. There were some quite lengthy answers that he gave today. Not as lengthy as that explanation why he was deciding to start Joel Pirro behind Jorginho Rutter before the international break. But some good stuff on player development, on Archie Gray in particular, on his experience of improving as a coach, and you know, wanting to continually learn in the roles that he's undertaking. Some great Farkisms. You know, there was the, you know, maybe in 30 years we can sit on the sofa and have a glass of wine. Dog eat dog world. Love that. That was a bolt from the blue from the press conference. And just the pronunciation, just, oh, brilliant. I think it's probably best to get into the content that Farke had to divulge today in his press conference. And that was primarily the injury updates. You know, he said prior to the Bristol City game and prior to the international break that Willie Nyonto, Jamie Shackleton, Junior Firpo were in contention, Jed Spence as well, were in contention to come back into the team following the internationals. Graham, what was the update from Farke?
Well, I think Spence was always an 8-week absentee, wasn't he? Expected for 8 weeks. So I don't think we'll see him probably till November at this rate. But I think it's good news on the rest of them. I mean, Nyonto is back in team training and has been back in since last Sunday, I believe. And after ankle surgery, that's not bad going. So he is available for Norwich and I believe he will travel. Jamie Shackleton, who had a painful shoulder that kept him out of the last two games before the break, having featured in no fewer than four different positions for Farke in the opening gambit of the season. He is back and available. He's back in team training. Junior Firpo, back in team training, although part integrated, which is the same term that Farke used for Stuart Dallas. So both those men have trained with the team, but they're not with the team full time yet. So they're not doing everything that the team does. They'll train with the team and then they might need a bit of recovery. They might need some individual training. So that was the case for Firpo, who was back in team training and then has had to have some individual training. And then they'll step up their recovery until such a time as they are training full-time with Farke and the squad. And then, after they've done that for a few weeks, then they'll be available again. So, apart from Spence, who's, you know, he had a knee ligament injury, didn't he, that mercifully did not require surgery. I think it was probably a better update or a more optimistic update than people might have been expecting today. And Farke's options, when he gets those players back, are going to be difficult. You know, it's going to be hard for him to make some decisions. And the hardest decision of all might be who to leave out of the matchday squad entirely, because at least one, maybe two or three players who will consider themselves a bona fide part of the squad are going to find themselves not even on the bench on a match day, if and when Farke has everybody fit.
I think just going back to what we were saying about today's press conference, it seems as though that, you know, Farke is really starting to enjoy this role. He's really started to settle into it, I think, because the first few weeks and the first few months of his time here, you know, July, August, were turbulent. You know, there was a lot of stuff that happened prior to his arrival, which meant that, you know, he was playing catch up, particularly in terms of contracts and transfers wise. But now I think with the team in good form, he's really starting to enjoy his tenure here. And that's coming through in the meetings that we have with him. He's returning now to a place where he probably had his biggest or greatest success as a manager, Carrow Road. I'm anticipating a mixed reaction for him there because of, you know, obviously the gratitude that they will have for the two promotions that he spearheaded as the manager. But also, you know, I think there's a select few Norwich fans who maybe weren't too happy with his comments when he joined Leeds, in the summer, where he sort of insinuated that Leeds were a bigger club and, you know, had greater resources. And that was something which had always, I don't know, stuck with him when he was at Norwich, that he kind of wished that he had that resource available to him. So I think it'll be a mostly gracious welcome. But, you know, for him, it's a nice line in the sand to say that, you know, he's back in England. He's back managing a top English club. And I think, yeah, the team are playing well. So why not go and take 3 points from his old stomping ground?
I mean, he really did cut the mustard at Norwich, didn't he?
Terrible. Terrible. How long have you been waiting for that one?
About 5 seconds. I think you'd be a very unreasonable human being, which of course a lot of football fans are, if you were to take umbrage at what Farke said when he came to Leeds. But in his utterances today about Norwich, he was nothing but respectful. He's tried to take himself out of it a little bit, you know, to make it so the story's not about him and his return, but that's almost a folly, because he will be the story. You know, when Farke walks back into Carrow Road, he is the story. So he can't really avoid that. But he did try to kind of downplay it and talk about, you know, this being, you know, it's a match for players to decide, which is a good line that a lot of managers use whenever the whole, is this a chess match between you and whoever comes up, or, you know, how emotional will this be for you? It's got to be emotional, though, because he's got incredible memories. You know, they had two unbelievable seasons of Championship football where they just wasted almost everybody, and record points totals and that kind of thing. You know, Pookie scoring millions of goals, Buendia just, you know, having a time of it in the 10 role, and fullbacks who flew up and down, and by all accounts Norwich fans really enjoyed it. You know, they were really, really enjoying their football. I remember going there towards the end of his tenure when Leeds beat them 2-1, and it was a pig of a game. Like, it was a rubbish game, not the kind of game that you want to travel all the way to Norwich for. And Leeds got out of it because they had Rafinha and Rodrigo with two bits of quality, and they got the win because of that. And at the time, Farke was under pressure, and I don't know, maybe I'm still massively naive when it comes to football, but I sometimes think if a manager has brought you success, and if he's brought you success twice, then surely he deserves a great deal more patience and time than just your average manager who doesn't really achieve very much. It's almost the same when I look at ex-Leeds manager Paul Heckenbottom at Sheffield United. I think he performed a miracle to get them into the Premier League with what was going on off the field, with the resources at hand, with the squad that he had. And so the idea of him being replaced this early in the season, which, you know, has been talked about and obviously been kicked around in the discussion about that club, that just to me seems utterly disgraceful. You only ever get the full picture and an accurate picture of the mood of a club when you speak to fans of that club. So it's easy for me, as somebody who wasn't a Norwich fan and somebody who isn't a Blade, to look at those scenarios and think, well, that's a bit hasty. But that would be my read on it. And Leeds feel, or they felt in the summer when they appointed Farke, that his time in the Premier League with Norwich was not a concern, because their intention would be to resource him adequately when they got to the Premier League, so to give him a Premier League squad with which to do battle. And Leeds evidently felt that he did not have that when he was at Carrow Road. But there was none of that from him today. You know, he certainly won't be rolling that line out, and I think he'll be nothing but respectful after the game as well. But he's got to want to get one over on them. You know, he has to want. There's got to be a deep desire within him to come out of there with 3 points with his new club.
Do you think there's any danger of him doing a big Ron Atkinson and going into the wrong dugout before the game? And, you know, the cameras and the photographers don't tell him and he ends up looking a bit red-faced.
No. He strikes me as a bit too polished and composed for that kind of carry-on, although it would be very amusing. And he'd probably carry it off with quite good grace. No, he strikes me as a man who is quite well together. You know, like he's collected and calm. That's been the way he's been in his press conferences so far. And on the touchline as well, you know, some of the fourth officials have felt the force of his tongue, but he hasn't kicked off, has he?
No, he hasn't kicked off. And it's a very interesting term that you decide to use there to describe maybe the hairdryer treatment is what I would have gone with. But hey, I did say that, you know, this is the podcast for a little bit of whimsy. Usually we do kind of try to keep it till the end. But, you know, fine, a couple of minutes in, bang, we're there. But yeah, I'm very much looking forward to this game, to Daniel Farke returning to Carrow Road. And we haven't discussed in a couple of weeks the press food. And if we're going to the home of Delia Smith's football club, it's not going to be pucker pies, is it?
You'd hope not. I don't know if I can remember exactly what happened last time we went to Norwich when it came to nourishment, which is unlike me, because normally if a club makes a good impression, I will remember it and I will then speak favourably about that club. If it makes a poor impression, looking at you, Sheffield Wednesday and a few others, then I will also remember that very, very clearly. So I can't quite recall, and I'm not sure what that says about Norwich and their fare. Really, what should happen is Delia should be there with like a little kitchen set up in the press room and taking orders and, you know, just whipping stuff up. That'd be fantastic. But yeah,
she's of a certain age now, Graham. Are you trying to advocate for, you know, 80-year-old women still working in and waiting hand on foot on, you know, overindulged football journalists?
Well, let's be honest, we'll be still working at the age of 80. So what's good for the goose is good for the gander, Joe.
I might be. I think this job might have seen to you by then. I'm very much looking forward to Norwich. And it'd be good to go, you know, another game unbeaten, three games on the spin. I mean, if Leeds were able to pull off a win, that would be fantastic, because that would be three wins in succession, split by the international break. But, you know, that's exactly what Leeds need to start doing when you compare their away record with some of the other teams in the division. You know, looking at Leicester City and Ipswich, you know, Leicester have won all five of their away games so far. Ipswich have won four and drawn one of their five. And they are the two teams that are in the automatic promotion places. So it's no surprise that they are where they are, because if you look over the past couple of years, and certainly all the way back to, you know, last decade or so, the teams who do end up getting promoted, and this might, you know, you can come down on me like a ton of bricks and say that this is a very obvious point, but the teams who get promoted tend to be the teams who do very well away from home as well as on their own turf. So there is that needs improving, because Leeds have won two, they've drawn one, and then they've lost two in their first five away matches. So to get a win at Norwich, somebody who you'd imagine will be in the top half, you know, fighting for the playoffs come the end of the season, again, would be a very statement result.
I completely agree. You know, teams that do well at home and away tend to do well. Captain obvious. I think what Farke will be looking to do is to start putting runs together like he did at Norwich. You know, they went on some, you know, was it 13 and 14 game unbeaten streaks?
I think there was one season when they were promoted when they, I think they won or they were unbeaten in 19 of the last 21 games that season. Yeah. Which again, that's a remarkable spin.
It's sensational form. And that is title winning form. Now, I don't know if it's too early to say that the title is gone.
Ooh. But
well, it probably is a bit early to say the title is gone.
Titles aren't won in October, Graham.
No, they're not. But teams don't tend to start the way Leicester have started, do they? And it is a sensational start to the season. I, being an optimistic realist, I would say second place is very within Leeds' grasp. And I say that with no disrespect to Ipswich, but I don't see them having the squad depth and the collective experience and nous to stay where they are right now and to survive those kind of lulls and the injuries and the those periods of adversity that crop up when you maybe lose one that you're not expected to, or you lose one in certain circumstances and it knocks you and then you have to kind of come back. And I always think back to Leeds promotion season when they went to Forest, lost. Luke Ayling saw a ghost on his way out to do his post game and just looked like a man who had just been told he'd be walking the plank into the Trent. And the club felt like it was on its back. And then they went to Brentford, who were absolutely licking their lips. Thomas Frank giving it the Leeds will fear us line and really trying to ratchet up the pressure. And Leeds performed really, really well and came out with a draw from that game. And it just completely arrested the narrative that Leeds were falling apart. And it wasn't a win, but it was a, you know, it was almost like they'd been pushed back towards a cliff, but they dug their heels in at Brentford. And then they started moving forward again after that. And you just wonder if Ipswich will have it in them when those periods come. And they will come, because they do in the Championship. The Championship is brutal, to use a word that,
quite,
that Farke,
quite brutal.
Quite brutal, that, as Farke might say. And you look at Leeds and the squad that Farke has now, and I think it's a very fair question to ask if they are not better placed to deal with injuries, suspensions, and adversity that may crop up, because he's got really good options now across the pitch.
Just going to take you back to your comment about digging your heels in. If you're being pushed towards a cliff and then you begin to walk forwards, how are you digging your heels in? That's quite difficult.
You're being pushed backwards, right? The cliff's behind you and you're going to drop off the cliff,
yep.
Right? But you dig your heels in so that you don't move.
So you're lifting your feet up off the floor?
No. You're sinking your heels deeper into the ground so as to anchor yourself.
But then if you're being pushed towards the cliff, then you're going to topple over backwards.
No, you're not. Because at the same time, you're also pushing, because it requires a lot of forward momentum even to stop the slide towards falling apart.
Okay, well, when we go on the YEP trip to the White Cliffs of Dover, we'll test out this theory. I'll be the one doing the pushing, and you can, you know, your hypothesis that you can actually dig your heels in that, I don't know, scenario can be achieved. And then I will become chief football writer at the YEP.
No, we'll see.
Anyway, moving on to what's been happening over the past week or so. It was the international break. We had a number of Leeds players who were in action for their countries and in action at youth international level. Archie Gray played all of the minutes available to him as England's under-19s struggled and toiled in the under-19 European Championships first qualification stage. Three draws England's youngsters managed against Wales, Montenegro and Austria. That was after Daniel Farke had said that he hoped Gray wouldn't be needed in all three games. So to see him play every single minute was, well, that was a bit, it probably won't have felt good in the Farke household when he saw Archie lining up. What it did mean was that because all the games were being hosted in Montenegro, as is the system at this qualification stage and at that age group, they were broadcast free to air on YouTube on MNE Sports, I think. So now I'm completely fluent in Montenegro style football commentary. So you can test me on that in future. Please don't. There were some terrible, terrible pitches. So I was very, very concerned that Archie might be coming back with an injury. To hear that he wasn't injured during that spell was quite good. Graham, I think you saw the Wales game, or at least you saw the Wales qualification win result against Croatia in Euros qualifying, which featured none other than Dan James, Ethan Ampadu, and Joe Roden.
I definitely saw the result. You're right there. Dan James, he's an assist machine. He's all about the end product. He's nothing but end product right now. Nothing but net. He's got it in him to provide a good cross. And we've seen that this season. And I think that'll be another confidence boost for him. Like I just think he'll, at the minute, he'll feel a world away from what he felt when Leeds sent him out on loan. And again, we've spoken about it before on the podcast, but all credit to him for having the attitude that he's had and being willing to come back and fight, you know, and play his part to get Leeds back up, and to do so without kicking up a fuss or without demanding a move back to the Premier League or anything like that. Nice lad by all accounts, and he's having a good season, you have to say. He will be the player who frustrates from time to time because his pace does get him into such good scenarios. I remember speaking to a Manchester United commentator when Leeds bought him, who said that if he acts on instinct, he tends to do the right thing and he tends to do the good thing. If he's got a load of time to pick an option, like if he runs through from halfway and he's got time to either decide on a shot or a pass, that was where he kind of ran into difficulties for Manchester United. And I think Farke said it, didn't he, earlier this season about his, where he could improve Dan James. And I think that's what he'll be trying to do with the winger, is to improve his decision-making so that when he is faced with those situations, you know, it becomes instinct to do the right thing and to pick the right pass. But I don't think you can quibble with the start of the season. I mean, you know, the assists that he's got, is it five?
I think it's more than that now. Because he got one against Gibraltar coming off the bench. I mean, I know it's Gibraltar, but it's still an assist. So I think it's six or seven now, because he's definitely got four for Leeds. So then that will be three on this international break. He might have got one in the last. Oh, no, he didn't get one in September's internationals because he was injured. So, yeah, I think he's on seven. Got his first goal as well.
Seven, yeah. And it's good. That's all good stuff, isn't it? If your players are going to play a lot during the international break, you want them to do well. Farke picked out Gruev as one who it was positive for him to play quite a substantial amount of minutes. They lost to Albania, didn't they, 2-0, but he played 86 minutes. And Charlie Creswell, of course, played for the 21s in the absence of Harwood Bellis. And that was a big, big plus, because Creswell hasn't been getting minutes, has he? He's in an interesting predicament, I would say, heading towards January. What do you make of it?
I think it's difficult because he will have signed that new contract in the summer with the knowledge, or at least the assumed knowledge, that he would be playing a much bigger role for Leeds this season than he has been and he had done previously. You know, you look at he played pretty regularly. I think he got 28 or 30 appearances for Millwall last season. for a team who, apart from a late season collapse for which Cresswell was injured, would have been in the playoffs. So if Leeds are, I mean, Leeds are around the same place, same position in the table currently. So you'd be safe to assume that a player who did it last season should be able to do it again this year. But, you know, it's something that you wrote in your piece this week, Graham, that, you know, the arrival of Rodon, him being pretty solid, you know, Pascal Struijk returning to the acclaim that maybe he had in fits and starts in the Premier League, that, you know, he was, I'm thinking sort of towards the end of the 2020-21 season, when he was quite good then. It's meant that because they're fit, they're starting ahead of him because they've got that rhythm and they've got that match readiness. So it's been difficult for Cresswell. And, you know, it hasn't helped that the I think two of the games that he started, which was Salford, which wasn't exactly a great game to be at. I'm sure he'll vouch for that. Or great game to get back from, which I remember you had a little bit difficulty there. I've got a story of my own, actually, which I'll bring to the podcast shortly. But yeah, that game at Salford and Birmingham, which Leeds lost as well. Cresswell started those, so obviously that hasn't worked in his favour. But football's a cutthroat business. It's dog eat dog, as Daniel Farker might say. And, you know, it's what's best for the team. It can't be making allowances just because he's a local lad. He's, you know, he's full of passion. He's full of desire. He's somebody who is, you know, resonates well with the fans. You've got to play the best player for the position if they're available, or, you know, the player who's got that rhythm. To answer your question, because I know I've gone about it in a very roundabout way, I think he will be looking at January thinking, well, what am I doing here if I'm not going to get in this team? I need to go and play, because ultimately, you know, he won't end up playing for England's 21s when Harwood Bellis is back fit. If he's not going to be playing for Leeds, where's he getting his football? So I think he'll be pro. He doesn't strike me as a shrinking violet. He's a very proactive individual, and will certainly seek the minutes. But, you know, who's to say that Rodon doesn't pick up an injury, or Struijk, or Cooper, or someone? It's a difficult one, but this is what happens when you have a squad rather than, you know, the what has been the case previously under, you know, Farker's predecessors.
If everybody was getting minutes, you'd have a problem, wouldn't you? Because you'd have no cover.
Well, you'd have no cover, and I think referees would have an issue with that as well. You're only allowed 11 on the pitch at any one time.
Well, that was my inference, that if everyone was getting minutes, you'd only have 11 players.
I'm just fulfilling my role of as Captain Obvious this week.
Yeah. Cresswell, during pre-season against Monaco, he dived in and Farker went absolutely spare on the touchline. And then it happened again. And I can't recall exactly where, whether it was Birmingham or whether it was another pre-season game. I can't remember. It might have been against Nottingham Forest. Might have been.
Which kit were Leeds wearing?
Oh, I can't remember.
I know, but that would narrow it down.
Yeah, it would narrow it down, but I can't remember. I just remember that Daniel Farker was wearing all black. So one of those games. yeah, so, and I also remember Cresswell saying that when he was at Millwall, at first, he needed to just calm down. He was so determined to make a good impression that he was maybe a bit rash. And I wonder if that was the same this summer, you know, that he was just so desperate to make a good impression and show the manager, look, you can trust me and play me, that he's maybe just been a little bit rash in his decision-making. He's still only 21. He's got an absolute boatload of time on his side. I would understand a frustration at not playing, and I would understand a desire to maybe go and play in January elsewhere. But then there's that counter argument of staying at Leeds and being a part of it, you know, being a part of something special, because your peak years are so far ahead of you as a centre back at 21. So it'll be a really interesting time, January. But, you know, what you said, you know, you don't know, somebody might pick up an injury. It almost feels to me like two need to pick up injuries for Cresswell to get a start right now, because I think Farker plays Cooper and Struijk, or he plays Struijk and Rodon, or he plays Cooper and Rodon. before he plays Creswell. That's how it feels at the minute. But then who saw Archie Gray playing right back?
Well, you know, not Bristol City. That's what we found.
Not Bristol City and not us. So Farke maybe got a surprise up his sleeve. He's maybe got a role for Creswell or a game for Creswell. But if the situation remains as it is, then he's got a decision in January.
Certainly. I was just alluding to a story that I had from the international break, similar to your troubles, your Planes, Trains and Automobiles issue coming back from Salford earlier this season. And that was this week as I went to Stadium MK in Milton Keynes, or actually Bletchley in Bedfordshire, because that's where England's under-20s were playing Portugal. Darko JB and Matteo Joseph, two Leeds youngsters, were involved, of course. And got to catch up with Matteo at the end, who gave me very, very choreographed answers to some questions about his future and his goals for the season. But a very, very nice lad, and you know, someone with bags of talent. But I have to say, Bletchley as a place is the least walkable place, the least walkable town I've ever been. It was like Apple Maps from the train station took me the Takeshi's Castle route. It felt like everything I had to traverse, you know, dual carriageways across. You know, there was no crossings, no pavements, just grass verges, which I think is quite fitting considering that was the home of the code breaking during World War II. That I had to sort of break the code of where the next bit of asphalt was on my way back to the station in the evening as well. Ruined my new white trainers. And you were utterly delighted by it, weren't you, Graham, as I was sort of sharing my travel woe with you. But I do have one thing to say about Stadium MK. It does have a McDonald's right by it, which was very much appreciated afterwards because, you know, these sorts of youth international fixtures, you don't tend to get a nice spread, or at least the spread I'm expecting this weekend. You also get lots of screw fixes around these sorts of grounds, and there was one there, lo and behold. I just think, what are the other things that you like having around an away ground? I mean, to be fair, Elland Road has a Mackey's. Not that I've frequented that one too many times. But, you know, I'm trying to think, the ones that are sort of in industrial estates or, you know, disused car parks are pretty rubbish, whereas the ones that are, I don't know, right in the middle of a city centre, you always quite like those locations, don't you?
You do if getting there is plain sailing. I mean, obviously we get to the ground quite a lot earlier than the average matchgoer, and so traffic might not quite have built up yet. So our kind of approach and exit tend to be a bit more rose-tinted than most. I like a press car park, so we don't have to abandon it somewhere in the back streets and then pray that we'll see the car again. I quite like a subway now and again. If you know, you're at a ground where, like Sheffield Wednesday, the press food isn't particularly edible. Only joking. You know, isn't particularly mouth-watering and eye-catching, then maybe a subway.
You want to be careful there, because we might get a chancy restatement on the catering.
Can you even imagine how long the statement would be as well? And I don't have time today to read a chancery statement. There isn't enough hours in the day as it is, so that would be a real blow. So yeah, I take back everything I said. The bacon sandwiches were absolutely great. The bacon was not at all rubbery. It was fantastic. What else do I like around the ground? You know what I really liked? When we went to Elche, obviously you weren't there. I was there though.
Cheers.
But you weren't. And at Elche, built into the stadium all the way around are little like bars and eateries and nightclubs that are actually in the stadium. So if you think kind of almost in between like turnstiles, you know, at gate 5 and gate 6, you might have like a little row of restaurants or bars or cafes or whatever it is, or supporters club. What it does is it draws people in and around the stadium before the game and just creates an atmosphere. I imagine for like their big games that the atmosphere would be absolutely superb around the ground, so that when you're walking in, it feels like an event, like it feels like an occasion. I think every ground should be like that and should have, you know, like a Subway or that nice noodle place you sometimes get at a decent service stop. What else would I want? Probably not a WH Smith. I've got to be honest.
That's very much airport territory, isn't it?
Yeah, you'll get five or six in an airport, won't you? Maybe a nice coffee place to get like a...
Local coffee, local roaster. None of this franchise rubbish.
Yeah, local beans for local fans, of course. Yeah. And what else? Maybe one of those... Do you remember those weird fish places where people used to go and get their feet eaten by tiny fish?
Yes, I do. They were all the rage sort of like, what, 10 years ago or something?
Yeah, football never really got into that, did it? Like, I don't remember...
Missed opportunity.
I don't remember many footballers posting on their Instagram that's where they were, or they were having like people come round to their house with the fish in like a bucket. And then, you know the way they used to have those drip doctors that came to the player's house with a drip. There was a really, yeah, really interesting story, wasn't there?
There was a very interesting story relating to quite a high profile footballer in England.
Absolutely sensational. But no, they never got into the feet fish business. So maybe one of those. And what else would I like? Obviously, you'd have a club shop.
What we need to do is we need to get on the blower to Angus and say that you need Graham on the executive planning committee for the Elland Road redevelopment.
Well, now that there's a vacancy, when it comes to commercial matters, then this could be my big moment. I mean, you thought some of the kits under the previous era were bad. You haven't seen anything. A blue away kit, obviously, with some sort of red and white in there, white shorts, black socks with red tops.
Scandalous.
But I would throw in a yellow. I mean, the very first thing you would do, right, if you were walking into Leeds now and you had any kind of say in the kits, wouldn't you just produce a nice, classy, almost Sweden-esque yellow away kit?
Yes, but that's doing the sensible thing. And I don't know if you've checked, Graham, but this club has not been made famous by doing the sensible thing.
No, not so previously, but this is a very different era. Now, I'm also, you also have to say that, yes, the kit's always sold really, really well. Now, the jury's very much out on the fruit pastel number and how it sold. And there was one of last year's, I think, that didn't do quite the numbers that previous ones did. Like the charcoal and pink one sold an absolute shed load. And it kind of showed that football kits are not for old men like me. They're for younger men like yourself and other demographics. And I understand all that. But when you have a fan base that is so desperate for a yellow kit, wouldn't you just give them a yellow kit just once? You won't even notice it. You won't even notice it's there. Just drop one out and let them all buy it. And then they'll stop asking for it for a little while. So that would be my advice.
I think you underestimate the desire for, well, the desire for something new and shiny from football fans, because how often have we seen where, you know, fans will be like, sign X player or sign this, sign that, and then that will come and go and everyone will be very pleased and very happy with it. And then it'll be, right, well, we still need a centre mid. We still need a right back. What's next? Come on.
What's next?
I need that constant stimulation.
That is my favorite reply to any signing. Right, who's next?
Yeah,
they're not even, and literally barely in the door and haven't even said hello yet or kicked a ball in anger. What else? What would you sell? Bear in mind, this is a club that sold bucket seats. What would you sell? Would you sell a Daniel Farke range of like jackets?
Yeah, straight away. I knew you were going to say that. The duster. I don't know if that's the correct term, but it's sort of like an anorak. With the letters that Farke and anorak shares, there's definitely some sort of word play to be had there. I'd do that. It would only come in black, obviously. Why would you need any other colors?
It would maybe come in two shades of black.
Yeah,
like black and then none more black, or unbelievably black.
Or each and just fantastic. It would be great. I think that's something which needs to come about.
Anything else? Because that was my idea.
Well, yeah, okay. If if I'm becoming the new commercial director at Elland Road, I don't know. I think maybe bring back, do you remember the crowdies during COVID?
Yes.
Bring back the crowdies, right? But make them the players instead. You would sell them. People would put them in their homes when they're watching Leeds.
Like next to them.
Yeah.
Like I'm watching the game with a cardboard Ethan Ampadu.
Yeah.
Or your da, who's on Facebook and has a certain player that he hates, and now he says, come and sit with me whenever a player clears it into the stand. He could literally say, come and sit with me, and sit the player next to him.
Mm. Or you could, you know, maybe get, you know, some Leeds United, so, you know, punching bags, you know, of certain figures that maybe you're not so fond of. I mean, I don't know what the legalities of that would be, to plaster someone with any sort of Leeds United association, whether that be players, directors, whether that be previous, you know, club staff, club owners, and put that on sort of the punch bag, and then, you know, people could work out to it. Leeds would produce the next generation of Olympian boxers.
Yeah, you'd have little Josh Warringtons all over the place. I think you might run into trouble when it came to image rights.
Yeah, so, probably.
So there might be a slight issue there. Yeah, I'm just trying to think if there's anything else that, you know, quite gimmicky that I would sell.
Just while you're having a think there, it's reminded me when we were talking about sort of boxing there, that typically, you know, you imagine that boxers will have a firm handshake. I've done it. I've found the firmest handshake in football, which is England's under 20 manager, Joe Edwards, who I spoke to, as well as Matteo Joseph during the week. Honestly thought he'd crushed every bone in my hand. And then just to really hammer home that he does actually have a firm handshake and it wasn't any sort of mistake. He then shook my hand at the end of the interview as well, with my already, you know, hand, which had been turned to mush. But I'd expect nothing less from a former assistant of Frank Lampard's, you know. He very much cut from similar cloth, shall we say, very well preened men.
I like that he went in for a second go. He must have felt that there was like a little bone that he hadn't quite snapped on the first occasion, and he's gone back in to finish the job. I shook Pat Jennings' hand once, and my hand disappeared. It was nowhere to be seen. Hands like shovels, that man, and still has a fine head of hair on him as well. Yeah, on Leeds United commercial matters, then obviously we've alluded to the Paul Bell news. So he is departing his role as the exec director when it comes to all things commercial, and will be retained in a consultancy role in a transitionary period. I think what the 49ers have done, I think a lot of people assumed, right, that they'd been in the building for quite a while because they invested during the Radrizzani era. They were his partners in the boardroom. Moratti was vice chairman, etc., etc. Having that presence in the boardroom and being a part of the ownership group is a very different thing from being able to walk into any office or corner of Elland Road and lift up the carpet to see what's underneath. You know, once you own the place, then you have full license to really dig into what is in your football club, what it does, how it looks, how it functions on match days, how it functions in every sense. And I get absolutely no sense that Paul Bell has been removed from his position, but I do get a sense that the 49ers have been looking really intently at every aspect. They're doing a really fulsome review of the club and how it operates. And so I would imagine that this is just a fairly natural consequence of that and the change that I think we'll see over the next, well, months and years, really. It's going to take them time to build a Premier League worthy operation off the field, because the club that they bought wasn't particularly sized or scaled for Premier League football. You know, that although there was some investment made, obviously, in when they did go up, it wasn't probably to the levels that you would anticipate the 49ers would want to put in. So I think headcount was a big thing for them, that they were, I think, quite surprised at the headcount at the club and how many people were probably doing quite a lot of work just as one person doing multiple, you know, roles, that kind of thing. So I think we will probably start to see an influx over the next 12 months, over the next 2 years, of people in various roles to oversee various departments, or create, not necessarily create departments, but roles that previously weren't kind of in existence at Leeds. So it'll be very interesting to see how that actually impacts the club's offering when it comes to stuff like commercial. You know, will the profile of the sponsors change? Will the quantity or the quality or the types of merchandise they offer change? Will the match day food offering change? That's one thing that's been a bit of a bone of contention for fans in recent years. I think if anyone was at Hull and was on the concourse, that for me is just about the gold standard that I've seen in terms of food being offered to supporters in the stadium. I mean, that was ridiculous. Like katsu curry and waffle fries and pulled pork, that kind of stuff. That is food that actually makes people want to go to the ground and eat there rather than having their tea before they come to the game. Someone said to me once, how ridiculous is it that so much of the football culture is the food that you get either before kickoff or at halftime, when ordinarily on any other day, you would not be thinking of having a meal at 3 p.m. or at 3:45. You know, you just wouldn't. What football has done has created a new meal time for people. An extra meal, a first dinner, you might call it, a football dinner, and football's done it really well because it's made it part of the match going tradition to have food, and I think if like Hull, you can offer food of that variety, then people would be very, very pleased indeed.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I'm certainly when I'm sort of watching football for pleasure, not for work. I'll maybe frequent the occasional burger van outside the ground, not too often, maybe on an away game or something. But yeah, it is something which I'd never really considered, to be honest.
Do you watch football for fun?
I do watch football for fun. Yeah. Okay. And not just through a laptop screen. So, yeah, just before you, I don't know, go up with that little quip or something.
This fun is like, let's categorize this fun that you have. Is it fun of the way cheering variety, or is it fun of the, oh, look how they're playing through the thirds variety?
Well, what I'll say is at the England 20s match this week, I was quite pleased to see that the player that I'd in my own head singled out for Portugal as being the danger man had scored within 9 minutes. So that was quite fun.
What did you base that on?
Should we move on from my hobbies then? Because I feel like
no. I just want to very quickly find out what you based that feeling on. Was it how you finished things off in the warm up? Was it previous knowledge of the player?
It was previous knowledge, having watched him.
Absolute nerd. A Portugal under 20s player. You have no business knowing that player is a good player yet. That is needless. Anyway, let's move on.
Well, it was quite good, but yes, let's move on. On to the final matter of business, and that was something you retweeted today, because I think that was kind of showing how far we've come this international break, that you are at the point where you are retweeting stuff which is an action figure of Big Sam Allardyce from a page called Soccer Slammers.
How did we not think of that and bring that up when we were talking about what we'd sell in the club shop?
I was waiting for it.
Yeah, this is what you would sell. You would sell action figures of past and present Leeds United characters, because the Big Sam one, Big Slam, is sensational. I mean, what a piece of work that is. That's art, modern day art.
There were a few others on there as well. There was a Neil Warnock one on that page, which I saw. There was a Steve Bruce one. Like really going for a particular theme here. And I was kind of half hoping that they'd have sort of a Jesse Marsh one with maybe, you know, you press the abdomen or something in it and it speaks. Something along the lines of minimum width would be quite funny, I think.
You know, if you brought out a Bielsa figurine, the amount of men of my age and above who would purchase that, or who would want that for their Christmas present, or who would cry if they opened that up on Christmas Day across Yorkshire and beyond would be phenomenal. I mean, I was thinking about it this week when I saw that a member of a rival podcast and some other Leeds fans had actually gone to Uruguay, taking with them one of the Bielsa buckets, because Bielsa apparently doesn't have one out there. I think he's back to using the water cooler, isn't he? That he used to sit on when he was Marseille boss, and they've taken him one out there, which apparently he's absolutely thrilled to bits with. But it's just the latest in a long line of global pilgrimages undertaken by football fans, whether those were Chileans who came to Elland Road, or I remember the Chilean journalist who came to actually Hillsborough and had the bacon sandwiches like the rest of us, or maybe he did, I don't know, maybe he turned his nose up, and asked Bielsa about the plight of the Chilean people and their protests at the time. Then you had Argentines coming to Elland Road, you had people from Rosario coming to Elland Road and trying to catch a glimpse of Bielsa, trying to get a picture with him. You've had Leeds fans travelling to Rosario itself, to the stadium named after Bielsa, to watch Newell's Old Boys. And the dedication of those who would call themselves, or maybe not call themselves, Bielsa widows, it's unlike anything I think I've ever seen when it comes to a football manager. I mean, do you think there's another football manager who is inspiring people to travel? You know, do you think there are Man City fans who travel to, was it Lazio that Sven Goran Eriksson managed?
Yeah, he was at Lazio, yeah. Amongst others.
Do you think there's Man City fans that travel to Lazio just to see where Sven Goran Eriksson stood in the technical area?
Probably not, because he was only there for about a year at Man City, wasn't he? Wasn't particularly successful.
I mean, he's a terrible example. Maybe
Roberto Mancini might be a better example, because he won.
I was going to say Bobby Robson might, because he was absolutely beloved, wasn't he? But yeah. There will not be many, I don't think, that would inspire not to inspire people to fly to the other side of the world to watch football just because a manager once managed and played there and is loved there. It's incredible. It is absolutely special and unique, I think.
Should I tell you what else is special and unique? Is that the people of Argentina have never sounded less Latin than when you said the word Argentine. It was like, honestly, I could have been someone from down the road from you. But yeah, we should, you know, dedicate a small section of this week's episode to Marcelo Bielsa, because he did mastermind a 2-0 win over Brazil in FIFA World Cup qualifying with Uruguay, which I'm sure everybody who's listening to this podcast has already seen. But some sort of headline stats in that were the fact that it was 12 games Uruguay had gone without beating Brazil, stretching all the way back to 2001. And Brazil had gone, I think it was 37 games against all opponents in South American World Cup qualifying without defeat. And yet, then comes Marcelo Bielsa. I think it was one of those, because, you know, obviously the South American qualifiers play overnight, woke up in the morning, saw the scoreline, and just sort of shook my head and just thought, that Marcelo, what's he like? He hasn't lost it, has he?
You've done it again. You've done it again, Marcelo. Yeah, it'd be really, really fun if he was to do something very special with Uruguay. It really would. At the age of 68 as well, you know, he's showing zero signs of losing his appetite for it. Rafa didn't play, did he?
No, he's injured.
He's injured, isn't he? Which is a massive shame, because that is the kind of, you know, a picture of Marcelo with Rafinha would do serious business with the Facebook Daz, and we would have absolutely flogged that to death for a bit of engagement. But maybe at some point down the line that'll happen. In terms of internationals, other than that, there wasn't a great deal of Leeds United stuff going on, was there? Not really.
Well, Calvin Phillips said he wants to play football in the least surprising revelation of the international break. But I mean, whether he gets a resolution in January, we'll have to wait and see. But he's not a Leeds United player anymore, so it's not the Inside Etihad Stadium podcast. although we have just dedicated a small section to Marcelo Bielsa, who is no longer Leeds United manager. So
no, but a part of him still resides at Elland Road. A part of Bielsa is still there.
Okay, that's very, very romantic of you. That's not like you on this podcast or at all, to be honest.
I resent that.
Right, well, on that note, I think that's just about where we're gonna finish this week's episode. Whether you've enjoyed the discussion around soccer slammers, or whether what would we do as commercial directors of Leeds United, or just simply the relaying of information from Daniel Farke's press conference, please do remember to subscribe to the Inside Elland Road podcast on whichever pod platform you listen, or if you've watched this on Shots TV. We hope that we've not broken your TV screen with I don't know, some of the images that I'm sort of seeing right here in the, on that side of my screen. But thank you for listening to the Inside Elland Road pod. I've been Joe Donoghue. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
The Inside Elland Road podcast is sponsored by PR Supplies at Unit 2 Wither Park Industrial Estate in Leeds. PR Supplies, everything for the home.